Hello and welcome to another edition of the Byron York Show, the No Chit Chat podcast. Now, as I speak, the Electoral College is meeting to cast ballots in the 2020 presidential race. The total in the Electoral College is Joe Biden, 306 votes, and Donald Trump, 232 votes. So we know how that's going to turn out. And I think there's a lot of things that need to be said now about the election and about the president's challenges to the election results in several states. First of all, his defenders have pointed out many times, and they're entirely correct to do it, that the president has every right to pursue legal challenges to election results in states that he lost narrowly. Going to court is not staging a coup or plotting to destroy democracy, as some of Trump's adversaries have charged. Now, we've seen that. You see it on TV all the time. Trump is attacking democracy. It's another attack on democracy. Going to court is not an attack on democracy. Going to court is the way that people, even the President of the United States, pursue claims in the American system. Now, many of the lawsuits brought by Trump and his allies, people working on his behalf, have been far-fetched, and he has lost nearly every one of them. But there was no great harm in bringing these lawsuits. That is the way the system works. And by the way, the system continued to work when the courts considered the cases and Trump did not win. Now, the most recent example we had, or the biggest example we had, was the Supreme Court. And it happened on Friday night. Were you surprised that it came out on a Friday night? I was not either. The state of Texas had sued Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And a number of other states had joined in with Texas in this lawsuit. And this was called an original jurisdiction lawsuit in the Supreme Court because that's the way it works for lawsuits between the states. So the state of Texas didn't go to a lower federal court and hope the case would make its way up to the Supreme Court. Because it was the state of Texas suing the state of Georgia, it could go straight to the Supreme Court. And what happened was that on Friday night, the Supreme Court said, no, we're not going to take this case. Now, you may have seen that two justices, Alito and Thomas, wanted the Supreme Court to take the case, or felt the Supreme Court was actually required to take the case, but they did not suggest that any other relief should be granted. Now, remember, Texas wanted to throw out the election results in these states, all of whom President Trump lost some very narrowly. Now, there was simply no way in the world that the court, at the behest of one state, would throw out election results in four other states. There was no basis to do it. It was not called for in the Constitution. It would have set a terrible precedent. I mean, imagine in 2000 with the whole Florida recount issue. If after Florida had certified its results, say the states of California and New York had sued Florida saying that its processes were unconstitutional, that would have been a bad idea. That would have been a bad idea. So the Texas suit was just not gonna make it. It was never gonna happen. It is the end of the major challenges to the election results. None of the other cases that the president or his allies have in the pipeline have the potential to change the election results. Remember, the president would need to change the results in not one, not two, but three states. He has 232 electoral votes. He would need to win Georgia, and then he would need to win Arizona, and then he would need to win Pennsylvania to get over 270 and be the winner. I mean, there's those states have all certified their results. In Georgia, they've had multiple recounts, and that's simply not going to happen. Now, recently, you may have heard some people in the Trump campaign saying they really have a lot more time to do these challenges. You may have heard Jonathan Turley, the legal analyst, say that the president was running out of runway. And the some of the president's defenders say, no, he's got a lot of runway left. They have suggested that the deadline for settling the election is not December 14th when the Electoral College meets. It's actually January the 6th when the Congress meets to certify the results of the Electoral College. Jason Miller, who's one of the president's prominent campaign ads, said it's all about January 6th when the new Congress tallies up electoral votes. But here again, there's no case in the court that could possibly lead to the switching of enough electoral votes to reelect the president. By the way, a lot of people seem to have forgotten that on January 6th, 2017, when Congress met to certify the results of the Electoral College, that is, the victory of Donald Trump, a number of Democrats tried to stop the whole proceedings. They tried to challenge the electoral results in a number of states, and they did not succeed, but they tried. And so, who knows, maybe somebody will try to do it on Trump's behalf on January 6, 2021, but it won't have any more success than it had in 2017. None of this is to say that Republicans have not uncovered serious problems in the way some states conducted their elections. Now, take one example. The Trump legal team has pointed this out. You may have seen video from election night and the next morning from the State Farm Arena in Atlanta, in Fulton County, Georgia, on election night. And it's unclear exactly what the video shows, but the Trump people believe that after shooing away all of the election workers and observers, including the press, some officials brought in tons of ballots and counted them for Joe Biden while no one else was around. There's surveillance video of all this, but it doesn't clearly show what happened. Now, everybody in charge denies that that's what happened, but their denials are, in fact, contradicted by some things that were reported at the time, late on election night. So it's clear this needs to be investigated. This definitely needs to be investigated to find out what happened. And remember, Georgia is one of the closest states in which Joe Biden won by about 11,700 votes. So it's definitely something that needs to be investigated. It cannot be concluded, I think, certainly not before the Electoral College meets. Which leads to another idea. Elections produced tons and tons of data. There are actual ballots. In the case of mail-in ballots, there are envelopes. That can all be studied after an election. And perhaps some conservative philanthropist should endow an institute for the study of the 2020 election, which sounds kind of like a joke, but it's not. I mean, seriously, there's an enormous amount of data to analyze, and it's especially important given the exponential increase in voting by mail in 2020. And so it's actually very, very important that we find out what happened in some of these cases. Beyond that, there's another serious issue raised by a case in Pennsylvania in which, the legislature said that absentee ballots had to arrive by 8 p.m. on election day. And the state Supreme Court just decided on its own to change that, to give people who send in absentee ballots or by mail ballots 3 more days to arrive and still be counted. And I mean, the Constitution gives the state legislatures the authority to conduct and make the rules for elections. And here the state Supreme Court just completely made it up on its own. That's a reasonable challenge. Certainly Justice Alito seems to think so, and it needs to be decided. We need to find out what authorities state legislatures really have in this. Now, we've had a lot of defenders of the state system say, well, the state legislatures have delegated to the election boards the authority to do this or that. And in the Pennsylvania case, it was the state Supreme Court that just made up a new deadline for the receipt of these ballots. Now, in the bigger picture here, what about these election results? They're really actually not all that surprising. If you look at all of the indicators of how the election was going, I think it was pretty clear before the election that a Trump win was possible and a Biden win was possible. I think perhaps one of the reasons for the intensity that we've seen on the part of many Trump supporters. Now, obviously, a lot of Trump supporters have had great intensity all along, and there's no surprise that it would be greater around an election, but it's even bigger than that. And I think perhaps the reason for that is the prevalence of the belief among some of them that Trump would win in a landslide. This would be a landslide Trump victory. The polls and everything were not only wrong, they were just completely super-duper wrong. So when that didn't happen, when Joe Biden actually won, it was only natural that they would look for an explanation. But a landslide was never in the cards. A narrow Trump victory was in the cards. A narrow Biden victory, which actually happened, was in the cards. Remember, Biden won by a total of 43,809 votes in Georgia, Arizona, and Wisconsin combined. Remember how Democrats would often try to denigrate Trump's victory in 2016 by saying he only won by a small number, 80-something thousand votes in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin? Well, Biden won by 43,000 votes in Georgia, Arizona, and Wisconsin combined. So it was close. It was definitely close. So I think that there was perhaps greater anger on the part of some of Trump's supporters because they expected that Trump would win in a landslide. And I think in retrospect it was an unreasonable expectation. I mean, remember there were people who thought that Biden would be senile and could not even take part in a debate with Trump, even though just months before Biden had taken part in 11 debates in the Democratic race for president. More water. And yet there was a lot of talk about how Biden was so senile he didn't even know where he was. He couldn't answer any questions. So I think in any election, some partisans have unrealistic expectations and unrealistic ideas. And certainly the idea that Trump would win in a landslide was unrealistic. And it has led, I think, to some of the post-election anger that we're seeing right now. You know, in the end, the results really were not all that surprising. I hate to be too simplistic here, but Trump had a lot of good luck in 2016, and he had a lot of bad luck in 2020. I mean, things just did not go his way. In 2016, he won by narrowly winning a few key states, and now he has lost by narrowly losing a few key states. And remember, it was close after Trump endured 4 years of 24/7 beating from the resistance, from Never Trumpers, from elements inside his own government, and many of the nation's largest media organizations. You know, and that in the end, all of that, the Trump-Russia investigation and everything else that happened every single day of the president's term in office, that in the end was the real election interference. And Trump supporters have every reason to be angry about that for a long time. The effort to remove the president from office began before he even took office. There was an alliance of Trump antagonists in federal law enforcement, in intelligence, and the media that sought to undermine him from the first moment, from that slick maneuver to publicize the Steele dossier. Remember the so-called P-tape? The Steele dossier, to the effort to nail General Michael Flynn to Michael Comey's game of publicly, of privately, assuring Trump that he was not under investigation while leaving the public impression that he was. And then on to the years-long Mueller investigation, in which Mueller, the special counsel, discovered early on that collusion could not be confirmed and yet allowed the investigation to go on and on and on for months and years. Through all of that, Trump faced unprecedented efforts to cripple his presidency and to make sure he would not be reelected. And in late 2019, House Democrats impeached him, specifically in hopes that it would weaken him so much that he could not win a second term. So, of course, Republicans are angry about this. Of course, they're upset about it. But despite it all, Trump has accomplished an enormous number of things. We'll do a podcast on that in the future. In terms of achievements, his is certainly the most impressive Republican presidency since Ronald Reagan. But the voters' mood, which was fueled by a frenzied media and all of those events I just discussed, turned against him. Now there's been a Supreme Court decision. Now there's been an Electoral College vote. And he can no longer sustain challenges to the election results. That's just what has happened. And he will have to adjust to that. And Republicans who are currently devoting much of their time and effort to challenging the election results will have to move on. So listen, thanks very much for listening. I know it's a very sensitive subject. When I've tweeted about this, gotten a lot of negative reaction. I understand that. So thanks for listening, and join us again soon for another edition of the Byron York Show.